All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Morning, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for being here. We appreciate your support. It's a beautiful Monday, June 3rd. Spring. Is it still spring? Because it's not summer yet. Right. Spring is in the air. It's beautiful. Thanks for having us, people, into your lives. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm great. Yeah, I'm great. Had a nice weekend. Went for a long hike on Saturday, which was really nice. And watched some hockey, obviously. Stayed up for the game last night, and now I'm here.
And that's where we are. And what a disappointment it's been in hockey. You know, great series, like really, really great series. But I went back and I looked at all the series and all the everything. Do you realize in the totality of these playoffs, we've had two series go to game seven and they were both in the first round, Boston, Toronto, Dallas, Vegas.
Wow.
That's it. Actually Edmonton, Vancouver, excuse me. Three series go to game seven. So it's just been disappointing. I want to see more game sevens. Lots of six. Lots of game six, as is the Western Eastern Conference Finals. They both went to six games, but it's just disappointing. I wanted one of these series to go seven games. You figure they're tied 2-2, evenly matched teams. One of them will go seven. Lo and behold, that didn't happen this weekend. Both series wrapped up. Edmonton wins and Florida wins, as we all know. We're all hockey fans here, so I'm not going to have any breaking news here. But it's just a little disappointing. I wanted to see some excitement, some game sevens. It would have been a lot of fun to watch that tonight and tomorrow night. Lo and behold, it's not going to happen. But you know, it's always a constant. This episode is brought to you by Bet365, Tim. Proud partner of the Dropping the Gloves podcast. Open an account with Bet365 today, and you can bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it is never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA whenever you jump in there. It's a lot of fun. Win some money. Right? All right. You got something on here. Tim does the agenda. He says he's got an email from Josh. We were talking before we started recording. He said it's someone you know. But he's not from Traverse City. And I know exactly what you're going to... I know what exactly what it is about.
I bet you don't, but let's hear it.
I haven't seen him in years and years and years. A friend in Houghton, Michigan, Josh Stein. And we were buddies. We used to play board games a lot. And one time, he's like, I can beat you in a foot race. And we went out in his front yard and we raced. And he's this short little guy, and he beat me barely beat me. And we were like wearing khakis and just regular shoes. I think that's what this is about. And he's going to allude to the tug of war.
It's not about that.
Interesting.
And you asked me before if it was Josh Stein, and I wasn't lying when I said no. So this is a different Josh.
I don't know many Joshes.
This is a former teammate of yours down in Houston. So he says, the email starts, hi, I played with John for part of 2 years. And I assumed it was a guy from your men's league team. I assumed it was one of that. There's nothing here about like, oh, I played on a pro hockey team. It's Josh Olson. He played in Houston Aeros with you. And he goes on and on about, you know, great persons, how smart you are, you're a gentleman, all this stuff. I'm not going to read it and pump your ego. But he says he's been listening to the podcast for about a year now. Said, you know, you have a great thing going. He says, ask him to talk about the Green Giant story. It was a Halloween party in Houston. Without Josh's help or guidance, you'd still be splitting wood in Houghton. Totally kidding. Anyway, thanks. I do enjoy the podcast. Very well done. From Josh Olson. Does that ring a bell at all? Do you remember the Green Giant Halloween party?
Did I dress up as the Green Giant? I remember Josh Olson, obviously. Yeah, he was one of the tougher guys on that team who took me under his wing. It was him and Joey Tedarenko, who were kind of the physical aspect of the Houston Aeros back in the day. A big power forward, if I remember correctly. Great guy. I don't remember a Green Giant. Maybe I dressed up as the Jolly Green Giant. I know I used to enjoy Halloween, so I would go all out for costumes. I know one time I went as Frankenstein and painted my body. I went as Michael Phelps and wore a Speedo all around Chicago in the middle of October, which was snowing. Maybe it did. I don't know. Houston was a time, Tim, I was still not married. I was, you know, dating my wife. My wife, we were dating. But, my you wife. Know, it was a different time. So I don't remember the Jolly Green Giant. I'm sure I had a great time. I do know that much. I'm sure I had a great time. But if he has any pictures, feel free to send them on. But I don't remember
that. I'll email him back and get some details. But, yeah, he played in all over Houston Aeros in 05, 06, and 06, 07.
Mm-hmm. That's when I was there for a little bit. I left, I think, in 06, 07.
He had 75 points in 05, 06, or 75, sorry, PIMS, not points.
I was going to say 75 points. I don't think so.
Yeah, 24 points. But yeah.
He was a tough cat. I think he was like probably 6'2", 6'3-ish. I distinctly remember we went out in Chicago one time and we were coming back from the establishment and we went and got Shake Shack, which was right by the hotel, and we were drinking and eating Shake Shack in Joey and Josh's room. I think he roomed with Joey Tedarenko. It was a lot of fun. And I just listened to stories of those two for hours and hours and hours. So mostly from Joey Tedarenko. If you haven't seen Joey Tedarenko fights, just go and watch him. Guy's like a Tasmanian devil. Big, thick, shorter Native American kid. Tough as nails. Reminded me of my older brother. Just his face just took a beating. Nothing would faze him. Some people can take a punch, doesn't affect them. John Morasty, legendary fighter, played in the AHL for years, went over to the KHL. I would hit this guy, Tim, 15 times in the face. It wouldn't even faze him. He'd be waving the refs off. And I'm gassed. I'm like, why are we doing this, John? It's just like crazy. And Joey Tedarenko had one of those faces where you could just punch it and there would be no damage. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I don't have one of those faces. It hurts to get punched in the face. These guys, they enjoyed it. I don't know how you, they're both Native. I know Native people are tough. My brother is half Native. He's my half brother. Tough as nails. I'm actually part Native. Here's what we're going to do. My family just got their status card in Canada. So that gives them the ability to have like free education and they don't have to pay tax and all this great stuff. So once they do their paperwork and file it, which some of them have it, I'm just going to get them to send me all their stuff and I'll just take out their name and put my name in. Then I get all that stuff. There you go. If I ever move to Canada.
Do you know like what tribe or anything like that?
Cree tribe.
Nice.
So my mom is mostly, she's like, what is it? So I'm an eighth. So that would make her what?
A fourth.
So she's a fourth Native.
A lot.
So like her grandma's full-blooded. Yeah. So watch what you say around me because I am a minority. You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't know. You white cis males make me sick. You don't know what it's like to be me, a minority. Just boggles my... Just the privilege.
Yeah.
It's coming out of your ears. Drives me bonkers. I've had to fight for everything. Literally, physically fight for everything. So, moving on before Tim gets in trouble and says something. And he's not going to be able to come back from it. But thank you, Josh, for the email. Appreciate it, bud. Hope everything's going well. And yes, I'm glad I'm doing this and not chopping wood. I appreciate your help getting me to where I am. All right, the losers from this past weekend, Tim, the New York Rangers. Surprising. I think the pundits were split 50-50 coming into this series. Florida obviously had just the playoff pedigree. They've been there last year. They know how to, you know, play the game. They know how to win in the playoffs. And that's a tough thing to learn without going through the experience of losing in the playoffs. Most people thought the New York Rangers have gained that experience. They've gone on long runs. They've had just the heartbreaking losses. Many of these guys have been on deep, deep runs in the playoffs. But lo and behold, they have learned absolutely nothing from their previous losses because they played atrocious the last two games of this series. Like just almost to the point of embarrassing. They were tied 2-2 in this series going into game five and game six. No life from the New York Rangers in my eyes. And that comes down to A, coaching. I don't think Peter Laviolette really challenged these guys. Everything in the press, all the media things that he did, he's like, you know, we're playing a really good team. We're doing okay, this and that. He didn't want to upset his star players, whereas other coaches were perfectly fine calling out players, which I like. The New York Rangers coach Laviolette didn't do that, and I think it resonated on the ice. These star players, and when it comes down to it, when you're paying four guys 50% of your salary cap, maybe 40%, and they don't show up, you have to talk about it. That's the reason why you guys lost. And this was all being swept under the rug for the first seven games of the playoffs because they were living on easy street. They play the Washington Capitals. They're absolutely garbage. They waxed them four straight. And then they surprisingly beat the Carolina Hurricanes three straight. On the back of their power play, on the back of their special teams, their 5-on-5 game was being hidden, secluded, not mentioned because their power play and penalty kill were being so effective, so efficient. Historical numbers. Well, lo and behold, teams started to figure that out. And what happens when you figure out the special teams of a team that's all they rely on? You get embarrassed. You get exposed. And I think that's what we saw in this series, the Florida Panthers exposed them for what they really are. They're a one-dimensional team, and when you take that dimension out, the power play, they're very pedestrian. And that they had that through the whole regular season. They were an average 5-on-5 team, middle of the road, but their special teams were very, very, very good. And the Panthers took that away from them, albeit from not taking penalties, being really good on the kill, just pressure, pressure, pressure. And then what do we get here, Tim? An embarrassing game 5 and 6 for these New York Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, the Kreider, Zibanejad, Panarin, and Fox combined for 2 goals in this series, 12 points total, which is, you know, 3 points a player, which is not enough from these guys. Like, you need way more. And I think Fox is the only one that clearly is not healthy. Watching the ice he was getting, it's just something wasn't right there. Maybe some of the others are, but again, we go back to that. We can't just assume because the guy doesn't perform in the playoffs that he's hurt. Like, you need better. They were playing on the perimeter like you texted me the other day. And just assume half of those 10 assists they combined for are probably secondary assists, just statistically, like just almost close to no impact on the game. And even Zibanejad, who was so good in the first couple of rounds, most of those points came from against Washington. Then he had 3 points in game one versus Carolina, and the rest is just piling up a few assists. He hasn't scored since game one versus Carolina.
You know what pisses me off? And I don't mean to cut you off, but it's been eating at me for the last couple of days. It's Chris Kreider. This guy, every stinking scrum, him and Sam Bennett, they went at it the whole series. Kreider's smiling. He thinks it's a big joke. He thinks it's all fun and games. Get pissed off, man. Right? Like, you're a strong kid. Go in there and get angry. And after every whistle, Bennett will give him a shot, or Kreider will give Bennett a shot, and they'll go back and forth. And Kreider does not show any anger, any emotion at all. He's very stoic until he's smiling. It's like it comes across as you don't care, as you just whatever. It's just a random game. It's game six. It's do or die. You're losing by one. And you're just sitting there smiling at Sam Bennett. Like, joke's over, man. Like, it's not going to be effective. The idea of, like, oh, I'm smiling at you, this doesn't matter. Sam Bennett is running your show. He's leading this series in goal scoring. I think he had five at that point. He is having his way with your first line. Air quotes if you're not watching on YouTube. You suck. Get mad. Do something. There was PK Subban. I throw stones at him sometimes because I think he's just trying to pander to the young kids and just go viral or wherever, whatever. This last game, he really impressed me because he called out these New York Rangers. There was a play where Barkov was behind the net and Chris Kreider just kind of glides into him. You could bury this dude. Bury him. There's a reason Adam Fox isn't playing 100% because he's probably hurt, like you said. Why is he hurt? Every time he gets the puck behind the net, every time he gets it on the half wall, every single Florida Panthers guy is trying to drive him through the damn boards into the first row. That's what they do. Every single one of them. Tarasenko, Barkov, Tkachuk, Reinhardt, all of them, Tim. All of them. They do it. Do you think any of the Florida Panthers defensemen care if the first two lines are on? Do you think they're going to get hit? Nah. They get rubbed out, maybe. They're not nervous whatsoever. Maybe if the fourth line's out there, Goodrow will take a run at you. Maybe. When Rempe's not in the lineup, and I'm not clamoring for him to be in the lineup, they had nobody. And then their big hitting captain, we'll get to him in a second. He's whiffing on guys left and right. Whiffing. For drastic mistakes that just getting beaten. Anyways, that it just pissed me off to see Kreider do that. And it's just, what are we doing here? Try. Show some effort. Yeah, go ahead, Tim. Sorry.
Well, there's a difference between the smiling that Kreider was doing versus like the crap-eating grin, like the Marchands and the Bennetts. Mm-hmm. And even like, who was it? Was it LaPierre or LaPerriere? Used to always have that grin and just,
Maxime LaPierre.
Like, get a reaction out of you, right? Like, that's different from like smiling. It's too casual. And the Rangers, you know, relied on talent and they got them through two rounds, but they didn't have an answer when they get punched in the face. And like we said, you know, Rempe helped them through a couple of games. They're up 2-1 at one point in the series, and he was part of that. But he just wasn't talented enough to stay in the game. Listen, and get
if you're relying on your 6'8" goon from Hartford to come up and win you the Eastern Conference Finals, you got way bigger problems to deal with. And the Rangers' response to being punched in the face is to smile. Thanks. It didn't bother me.
Vancouver used to do. Remember Marchand just punching Sedin over and over and over? Yeah. And he didn't do anything. You
it's
know,
just it's almost comical. It's like an NPC. You just keep hitting him. It's like, is this guy alive?
Yeah. No. Let's talk about Trouba.
All right. Jacob Trouba. I love this guy. I absolutely think he's a fantastic defenseman. I think he's very valuable on the back end. When he stays in his little limits, I think he just tried to do too much this series. I think he has this reputation of being a big hitter, obviously, because it's earned. He does that. But I think he relied on it too much. He tried to change the game too often, and he got caught out of position. He was trying to make big hit after big hit after big hit, and the Panthers exposed him. They stepped around him. They passed around him. They baited him maybe a little bit, and they just exposed him, much like they exposed the New York Rangers as a whole. This guy, it showed on the Bennett's goal, the first goal. Trouba steps up, tries to make a huge hit. Totally doesn't get anybody. Gets complete air. Like, what are you doing here, man? And they go in and they score Bennett. Beautiful goal. Beautiful. Like, Shesterkin had no chance at any of these shots, but it's their captain. And this is not the first time he's done this, Tim. It's time and time and time again throughout these playoffs where he just gets himself out of position. And the thing that's scary is he is rubbing off on the defensemen around him. Like, you can see Gustafson does it sometimes, Lindgren does it sometimes, where they just want to go and make this impact hit, and then you get caught out of position. There's a time and place for everything. When it's 0-0, game six, almost the end of the first period, and you go for that big hit after your forward just made a terrible turnover, and I was talking about this before the hit, the attempted hit by Trouba. If you're a forward, and you're in the defensive zone, and there's 1 minute left, and you're on your forehand, Why the hell do you go on your backhand and try to flip it out of the damn zone? I was screaming at the TV, screaming. I was mildly yelling because I was at my house. Like, I literally said, what the hell are we doing? What are we doing here? Sure enough, 20 seconds later in the back of your net. Not many people picked up on this because Trouba was terrible step up play. I don't know who the forward was. Forehand? Takes it to his backhand, tries to flip it out on his backhand, doesn't get even close to the red line, back down your throats, back in the net. It's terrible, terrible situational play by the New York Rangers. Last minute of the period, just get it out. Yeah, Trouba. What are the people saying about Jacob Trouba?
Well, when a player's out of position like that, like consistently, you would think it'd be like a younger, less experienced or less skilled player, or at least maybe less playoff experienced, right? Mm-hmm. And you lead to like the older veterans, the captains, the leadership, or the coach. But what do you do? Like, who's watching the watchman? He is the captain. He is the veteran leader. You know what I mean? So that's why it kind of ties back to the coach a little bit. Because he also, don't forget the overtime goal. Was it game four? People are pissed. You know, all the Rangers fans, and a lot of this is just an emotional reaction. Like, some of these tweets were going around that night and the next morning. But it was like the buyout structure of Trouba's floating around. We're costing $4 million against the books, and that's not going to happen. They're talking about, like, must-do off-season stuff. It's trade him, put the C on Kreider, who probably, I was surprised didn't get it anyway. But, they're not happy with their captain. And it's strange, like, the captains are usually, like, the most beloved, trusted figures in every team. And right now he's got to earn it back from their franchise, from their fans.
Well, I think he made his bet. He's prided himself at being a physical defenseman who plays on that line. We saw it earlier in the New Jersey Devils series or the Washington Capitals series when he's taking runs at guys and just missing them and this and that. And then he paid for it this series. He clips Rodriguez in the head. He maybe should have been suspended. He gets to out of position in the overtime goal. Blake Wheeler has to take a penalty, and then he did cost him the game here. So live by the sword, die by the sword, Tim. It is what it is. So he needs to just simplify his game a little bit. He's a good defenseman. Listen, he's 30 years old, solid player, does what he does great, but you know, he's drinking the Kool-Aid. He thinks he's Scott Stevens every single shift. It's like, you don't have to do it every shift. Like, just, you don't have to do it every game. Once every four or five games, lay someone out. That's it. Just pump the brakes. But he'll be there. He makes $8 million. No one's going to take that contract on. Are you kidding me? What GM in their right mind? You're going to get a 30-year-old defenseman who barely cracks 30 points every single year and makes $8 million. That's an untouchable contract. So he'll be back there. As crazy as it sounds, they have bigger fish to fry. When you're first line, and let's not get started on Zibanejad. I hate this guy. And not him as a person, just the way he plays. It just boggles my mind. It's so incredibly just lackluster. And we've been talking about this a little bit, but let's talk about their star player, the bread man. Artemi Panarin, the guy who they had a bidding war with not 4 years ago. It was them and the New York Islanders. I remember it distinctly. Where is Breadman going to go? He's a UFA. Very unheard of for a player of this caliber to be on the market. Where is he going to go? Well, he picked the New York Rangers. He wanted the bright lights. He wanted to be in the mix. You know, that's where he wanted to be. He signs an almost $12 million contract at that point. That was huge. One of, if not the highest paid player in the league in 2019, Islanders missed out. How many playoff wins do you think the Rangers have in that time? So it's been 6 years now since he signed. Rangers have...
I don't have a number. I would assume it's one of the most in the league. It's 20, up there.
24. 24 wins in 6 years. That's a lot. Islanders have 25. So I'm not saying... It's just a stat. Islanders have more playoff wins than the Rangers do in that time frame since Panarin signed the big deal. And the Islanders were all in. Yeah, they lost Tavares. They wanted Panarin. They had to replace him. Lo and behold, the Rangers win. But did they win? Did they win? I don't think so. What do you think of his effort, Tim?
Yeah.
This playoffs.
Very Marner-like, you know? And he's actually a pretty similar player.
Isn't it funny that that's a verb? Marner-like?
He really Marnered it. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I mean, it's not just like I barely noticed him out there. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just that he wasn't scoring. He wasn't really doing much at all. And he was playing in the perimeter, didn't want to get dirty, didn't want to, you know, take the hit to make the play. And as cliche as it sounds, and then he didn't produce. It's strange. It's strange. And I wonder if he'll have an Elias, if he'll Pettersson it and say, I've been hurt since January and whatever. But I don't know. Not good enough.
Not nearly good enough. And it showed on the Panthers' second goal. Just awful. He turns the puck over and he's tied. Like, he turns it over with Lundell. And they're side by side. And Panarin doesn't even skate. Doesn't even skate. Yes, Lundell would have beat him probably. Why not skate a little bit? He just straight legs it the whole way back and watches the whole play unfold. And he just, it's It's so terrible to watch. That's as your almost $12 million player. It's crazy. There's no coming back from that. It's just a total lack of any self-respect at all. Like, just throw some effort in, because you know the cameras are watching and you know I'm going to say something. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. Like, figure it out. Yeah. You have your captain making bonehead plays. You have your top forward who can't give a damn. And you have your top goal scorer in Zibanejad who just sucks. There's no other way to say it. This guy sucks. That's it. He makes $8.5 million. He's on salary for another 5 years. Five. He's signed till 28, 29, Tim. Sucks. I'm sorry. For an $8.5 million player, for how he produced this playoffs, embarrassing. And it's not like he's just hiding. He makes his team worse. He does. Every power play, he's zipping it high and wide from the blue line. The only time he's effective on the power play is when he leaves the power play. His stick breaks and everyone's like, yeah, okay, good. We can do something. They score twice at the empty net when he's not in the zone. It's like, figure this guy out. But this Rangers team, Tim, what do? They have some significant RFAs and they have some significant UFAs. They also have a lot of money tied up with their current core. What do? They don't have a lot of room to work with this summer.
I mean, so the RFAs are Kako, Ryan Lindgren, and Schneider. UFAs, Roslovic, Wenberg, Wheeler, Gustafsson, Roedel. I think some of these are fairly obvious. Like, you know, Wheeler's gone. Wenberg's probably gone. Gustafsson's probably gone. I think you have some decisions. Kapo Kako, do you finally let him go? Do you qualify him and see if someone else makes an offer? Like, what do you do if you're him? Because he's giving you nothing. He's giving you nothing. There was this floating around his like draft card of where he fit on the TV, and it was like top line right winger right away, and there was like room for improvement, none. Like he was a lock.
He was already there.
He was already there, and he's not.
Yeah. So, he's gotten top line minutes. He's played with Zibanejad and Kreider a lot. He's played with Trocheck and Panarin a lot. He played with Hedl and Lafreniere a lot. Nothing. The only glimpse of success he has, but not this year, but last year when they had those young guys together. But it was fleeting. It wasn't very long.
Yeah.
The kid line. Lafreniere, Hedl, and him. And it was fun to watch, but ever since then, he's just been pedestrian. This year, he didn't even put up 20 points this year. He had 20 points. So what do? Do you keep investing in him? You keep wasting years of your team waiting for this guy to have it click? I don't know. Does he go somewhere else and all of a sudden someone solves the puzzle? He has some talent. There's a reason he was drafted. What was he, second overall? Like, this guy's obviously have something there, but he's, I don't know. Is this a Jesse Pulviari type deal where we're just like, it's going to happen. It just never does. Yeah. He never figures it out. He's 6'3", 210. He's got the size. He has the hands. Just can't figure it out. He can't put it all together, but they'll keep him around. They'll keep him around. What's the downside? He made 2.1 this year. There's no chance he's getting more than 2.1, right? No one's going to offer sheet him. He has no other options. So he'll make maybe 2.5 tops, sign him to a 3-year deal and see what happens. He's throw him on the third or fourth line. He's good defensively, but he won't be that first line right wing. Lock him in, set him in. He's good. He's going to get 30 to 40 goals a year. Nah, that ship has sailed, my friend. So I think that's an easy one. The big decision is, what do you do with the top guys? How do you change this team? How do you make this group work? What makes sense? Panarin signed for 2 more years. Zibanejad is 5. Like I said, Kreider is 3. You're not touching Trocheck. That's a great contract for 5.6. Fox is the only defenseman who's locked in long term. So, two big questions coming up. Do you re-up Igor Shesterkin? He's in a beautiful deal, 5.6. He's the best goaltender in the world. He's going to want some money next year. He's going to want $10, $11, $12 million. You better believe that.
Yep.
Do you give it to him and sacrifice the whole makeup of your roster? Because Panarin's going to want money too the following year. He's going to want $14 million. You better believe that. This guy's good in the regular season. Puts up a ton of points.
You let Panarin walk over Shesterkin.
Tim, the last 3 years, Panarin has averaged 105 points in the regular season. I agree. You let him walk, but it's a
It's not easy.
A lot of big decisions coming up for the Rangers.
Well, you've got your guys. They're like some of the, they're like Toronto. You know what I mean? Like your guys are who you are, who they are. Yep. I think the one place that they need to, that they should have addressed at the trade deadline that they didn't, is a top six right wing, right-handed shot. They don't have it. Yep. Like Lafreniere is, I think he's a lefty, right? And then Hedl, is he really that guy? And you tried Capocacco, didn't work. You tried to bring Roslovic there, it didn't work. It's a glaring hole in their roster that they should have addressed, and they didn't. So I think that's, if you, I don't, they don't have the cap space to do it, but you try to figure that out. It's probably the biggest priority this offseason.
Yeah, they tried last year. They brought in Tarasenko and Kane, two really good veteran right wingers. Kane worked, but it just, they obviously went a different route this year. And listen, they were the President's Trophy winner, Tim. Best team in the league in the regular season.
Right.
I don't know. It's a weird problem to have as a GM when your regular season team is so good. Unbeatable, some would say. Then you hit the playoffs and you go for a skid. It's the same problem as the Leafs. They're very similar. Chris Drury, I do not envy your position right now. Because you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You got Shesterkin, you got Panarin, you got all these guys. You're not going to get a better player to come in and you know, make your team better. Unless you're the Florida Panthers and you have a Jonathan Huberdeau, who is the same type of player as Artemi Panarin, and you trade him for a Matthew Tkachuk. And you swing for the fences. Because you know,
Brady, right?
Yeah, you know what your issue is on your team. You know what it is. You just don't perform in the playoffs. You don't have that it factor. And kudos to the Florida Panthers for making a tough decision. Jonathan Huberdeau was coming off an MVP caliber season. And to trade him, Tim, is nuts. With one of your best defensemen, Mackenzie Weegar, for Matthew Tkachuk, that's a ballsy trade to make. And they made it. And look what's happening now. It's paying in spades. Look at Huberdeau. Look at Huberdeau. That guy should win GM of the year every year, forever.
Like that every was year that Tkachuk's on the team. Yeah.
Yeah, such a good trade. And maybe they need to make that drastic move. Trade Panarin. Trade him. Bring in someone who's maybe less skilled, but a better hockey player, like a Brady Tkachuk. That'd be fun.
Something to prove, yeah.
Yeah, just brings a different aspect. Who on the Rangers was ever in a scrum? Whoever looked physically engaged, nobody jumped off the page at me. Even on the back end, Keandre Miller bothers me. He's so talented, so good, has so much upside. He's 6'5", 225 pounds, plays like a pussycat out there. You know what I mean?
He's really good with the stick, Pocheck and all that stuff. But yeah, he doesn't play to his size.
You know where I want him to be good with? His shoulder. Hit somebody. Pigeon toss somebody. Be a man. Let's go.
Does he have a little bit of Tyler Myers in him? A
lot of Tyler Myers. That's not, again, he's a Marner and Myers. We're making up verbs. I like Tyler Myers. I like him a lot. Doesn't play physical. I told him many, many times. I try to teach him how to fight. It's like, I was like fighting a ramen noodle. He's just like all over the place. I'm like, what? Grow a spine, grow a backbone. Like, let's go. But they have a lot of issues. They have a lot of issues. I like Braden Schneider. They should re-sign him. So I think he's a good defensive. All right. Anything else on the Rangers, Tim?
No, we're over 30 minutes in. We've only covered one out of the four teams, so we got
to
move on.
Oh, I was passionate about those Rangers. All right, moving on to the Dallas Stars. This is more of a sad. You know,
I'm sad.
Yeah. I'm sad. We're losing, you know, Joe Pavs, friend of the show. We're losing Matt Duchene, friend of the show. Jamie Benn, Ryan Suter, maybe friends of the show, potentially. And then how many of them are going to retire out of those four?
I think Suter is probably done.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think the others will. Pavs might, but he won't. So no, I think maybe just Suter.
Just Suter. Pavs has got one more year left on his deal. That was the 2003 draft. Very, very good draft. So Joe Pavelski, I think he was drafted. And this is off the top of my head, mind you. 200 something overall.
He was back there. Yeah.
Making good on his a draft position. But yeah, it was a sad finish for them. Not like the Rangers. They put up a fight, and what a game by Stuart Skinner. Can we just say that?
Yep.
When we were on Bleacher Report last month, they're like, bold predictions. I said, Stuart Skinner will steal a game for the Edmonton Oilers, and he stole this game. Boy, was he incredible. He was standing on his head. The Edmonton Oilers looked okay. You know, they played solid, but they gave up a bunch of shots, a lot of chances, and Stuart Skinner was there every single time. What annoyed me, the first goal for the Oilers Oh, unreal goal by McDavid. Like, no one on this planet can do that. Did you see the penalty that they called on Suter for the power play goal? Just a ticky-tack, atrocious call. He gives McDavid a little shot in the back in the corner, and they whistle him. It's just, I didn't like that call. I didn't like it at all. So it bothered me. That's why the game changed, because he gets that power play. Oilers get two power play goals, so whatever. Refs suck.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas was a lot of people's favorites entering the playoffs. It was my favorite. I had them winning it all, and they it looked like, I mean, they beat the two arguably toughest teams they could have been matched up against in the first two rounds, and then they got another tough matchup. And you think, okay, they beat Vegas, they beat Colorado, they can beat Edmonton. This would be their easiest series of the three, and they were up 2-0 in Game 4 with a 2-1 series lead. And since that time, everything flipped. They were outscored 10-2 over the remainder of the series, which is just, I mean, it's sad, but you have to give a ton of credit to Edmonton. We'll get into them and what they did right. And Dallas did put up a fight. Even like to watch the last, there was a sequence around the 8-minute mark in the third where they're down 2-0. I think it's still at that point. Maybe it was 2-1. I forget, but just like shot after shot and chance after chance and just little passes in the slot, and they're firing and keeping in the zone. You're like, oh, there's something coming. There's one coming. They got one more. This is going to overtime, and the Oilers just held on. So the effort was there, and they were such a deep team. I wanted to come on and blast some of the veterans and say, hey, Dallas should get the same criticism that New York does, but you can't. You know, like Duchene didn't have enough, and Pavelski, their age showed. They combined for 10 points total in the playoffs, but like Ben showed up and Sagan showed up, not to mention all the young stars. So just ran into a hot team, hot power play, and just a goalie that was good at the right time. You know, it's tough. It's tough to swallow.
Well, I think the distinct difference between the Rangers and the Stars is the Rangers relied. They needed their veterans to succeed. The Stars have Robertson and Hintz and Marchment and Wyatt Johnson and Logan Stankoven. Those are the team. The veterans are supplementary options at this point, and they might make more, maybe a little more, but the Rangers relied on their top two lines. The Stars have never relied on those guys to be successful. They were more, okay, you know, they're our second unit. Our first unit is Hintz and Robertson and those guys. So there's a slight difference, but there is some criticism to be had. It's like Pavs was mostly invisible in that series. Duchene was good. I thought he was fine. He couldn't find the back of the net, but he was good. He was making plays, but Pavs, he's old, man. He's old.
Yeah. Yep.
39.
Let's talk about the winners now.
All right. Tim's worried about the time, so we got to talk about the winners. The Florida Panthers. Same old, same old. They dominated. They asserted their will. They played the game that they want to play. They didn't play to the New York Rangers style, and they won. That's what they've done every single series. As soon as the puck dropped for their first series versus the Tampa Bay Lightning, everybody thought it was going to be a close series. No. We're going to play our game. We're going to dump it in. We're going to get pucks to the net, and we're going to score all our goals around the net. We're going to be hard to play against defensively, and we're going to drive you through the boards every chance you get the puck. Every single guy, like I said earlier. And they did it. They played the Bruins a second round. Same thing. Bruins had no answer. If not for Jeremy Swayman, this would have been a four-game series. The next series versus the Rangers should have been a sweep if not for Igor Shesterkin. The Panthers have played consistently throughout this whole playoffs the same exact way. And you saw Matthew Tkachuk when he got interviewed after the game. He's like, we all play the same game. We're a very frustrating team to play against. He's very sure of himself and what they do. He's like, we're tough to beat. When we're all doing the same thing, there's no shifts off. We're in incredible shape. Aaron Ekblad said the same thing. He's like, the difference from last year to this year is lights out. We're healthy. We're confident. We know we're good. Last year maybe was a fluke. We were surprised to be here. Not this year. We know we deserve to be here. We are the best team. He didn't say that, but you could tell he was just confident. And he's damn right. They are good. They dominated every single team they played because they asserted themselves, Tim. What did you see from the Florida Panthers that you liked?
Yeah, I mean, so much. I don't think there's a team in the league that plays the way they do. And like they're so specific in their game plan and the way that they do it, and they don't budge from it. You know what I mean? It's like the whole thing of your opponent trying to figure you out. And they're just like, no, we're not trying to figure you out. We're going to play our game, make you figure us out. And the road here was like, you play Vasilevsky, they beat him. They play Swayman, they beat him. They play Shesterkin, they beat him. Doesn't matter. They remind me of the 2019 Blues in that, like, the difference being the Blues kind of snuck in at the end. But, like, their physicality and just wanting to, like, run through everyone through the boards and just depth through the lineup and some high-end skill guys up top. But everything is just so physical, so much hatred in the way that they play. And they're just so good. And they're really, really effective at shutting down the other players, other teams' top lines. When you look round by round, and particularly it's Ekblad and Forsling, like that's their shutdown line, who also usually a shutdown line is just that. But these guys skate like the wind too. But in the first round, they played most of their ice against Kucherov, who had 0 goals in 5 games in that series. Second round, played mostly against Pasternak, who had 0 goals at 5-on-5 in 6 games. In the third round, they played mostly against Zibanejad and Kreider, who we know had 0 goals at 5-on-5. Like they couldn't get anything going. And then on top of that, you've got like Tkachuk and Verhaeghe and Barkov and Bennett and all these guys just flying up and driving to the net, and they get under your skin and they tilt you off your game. It's just, they're so good at it. And who's going to touch them? It's going to be a tough series for Edmonton.
Very tough. And a guy we don't talk about, I think we haven't mentioned him at all. Yes, you know, Forsling's been great. Ekblad's been great. Montour, you know, he's fantastic. Is Montour's partner, Nico Mikkola, so good. 6'5", 6'6", uses his body well, physical. I like his mean streak. Like, hey, he doesn't take anything. Like, he gives it to everybody. He's using his stick. He's physical after the play. He jumps up in the rush. I like the way he plays. Rangers had him last year. I don't know why the hell they let him walk. Very strange.
Even like, I feel like I don't have this in front of me. I'm sure the data doesn't say it, but like a guy like Anton Lundell, he's good for like one big goal every series, you know, like he's getting like 12 minutes a night and he's just like, yeah, give me a chance and I'm going to bury one in the third period. And they're so good, man. They're so good.
Yeah. Their third line, Luostarinen. And the thing we keep harping on and saying over and over again is the truth. They all play the same way. And when a guy like Carter Verhaeghe or Reinhardt, they're not scoring goals, they're still playing the same way. They're still getting zone time. They're frustrating the defense. They're wearing them down over and over again. It's like you're playing the run game. And it's a huge football game. The first quarter, it doesn't really seem like you're doing much. You know, you're moving the yardstick a yard at a time. You're getting stuffed sometimes. You're wearing down that other team. That's why the first period, they don't score many goals. The second period, they score a lot more. The third period, they kill it. Because the D-man don't want to go back. The forwards are tired. The goalie's sick and tired of seeing rubber. And they start making mistakes. And the other team starts just giving up. And when it's every single line and you don't have a shift off, it's like, oh, it's Barkov. Okay. No, he's going to bury me through the boards. Oh, it's Bennett and Tkachuk. Oh, heads up. I'm going to get nailed. Oh, it's Luostarinen and Lundell and Tarasenko. Oh, they're going to, you know, they're pricks to play against. Oh, it's Lorenz, Steinlin and Okposo. Oh, it's the same thing. There's never a shift off, Tim. And as a team, it's so frustrating to play against that type of team. It's just pesty. It's annoying. And when you pair that with world-class talent, it's a tough combination. It's a tough style to play. That's why a lot of teams don't play it. It's a copycat league. You think other coaches and GMs would be like, yeah, just go finish every check and skate hard. No, players aren't wired that way. But these guys are. It's a good group. They're tough to beat. But they're going up against the Edmonton Oilers, who have that world-class talent that can just make up for a lot of issues. Let's touch on the Edmonton Oilers, Tim. They finished off the Dallas Stars last night. Very sad for the Dallas Stars. Very good for the Edmonton Oilers. They started the season 2-9-1. And now they are in the Stanley Cup Finals, thanks to Chris Knobloch. What's going on in Edmonton, Tim?
Yeah, I remember that moment. It was a game like they just kept losing and losing and losing back in whatever, November. And there's that little picture of Draisaitl and McDavid just on the bench, slouch shoulders, heads down, like they were broken. And something happened and they flipped the switch. And part of it, of course, was a coaching change, but they look like a completely different team the rest of the way, basically. And I think we all kind of figure, you know, the talent is there. They're going to win a round or two. How do they get by some of these juggernaut teams that are just built? You might have picked Edmonton. I think I picked Dallas, but I think you had Vegas beating Edmonton last round. You know what I mean? Like it was just not Vegas. Who did they play? Vancouver. Brutal, but they just kept sticking with it. And when you have a guy like McDavid and Draisaitl and things like that can just take over, and you have a power play that clicks like that, you don't need a lot of chances. And it's strange because they set the record for the fewest shots ever in a conference finals clincher. There's 10 shots on goal. You win the game with 10 shots on goal. It's because they got 2 power plays. They scored on both of them. And he has Stuart Skinner just locking it down. And it's just really amazing.
The previous low was not 12. It was 17.
Yeah.
So they crushed the record for fewest shots allowed or getting and winning the game. Like, you shouldn't win a game getting 10 shots. It just should not happen. But they get two early power play goals, and away they go. And they were able to. This is what makes them different from years past. They had a goalie who made some saves. You know, when they needed a save, when they needed the guy to stand on his head, he stood on his head. Years past, that was not the case at all. Their goalies were costing them many, many games. So Stuart Skinner stepped up. For as much as he played garbage in the first round versus the LA Kings, suspect in the second round versus the Vancouver Canucks, played great. He really, really did. So if that continues, they're a tough team to beat. But let's just, can we just go back to Connor McDavid, how good he is? Incredible. Yeah. Like, really special player. That goal, that first goal, I know it was on the power play. He was, that's a nice goal. Like, that's a fun goal to watch. The fake shot, the backhand toe drag, the bar down in a tight spot, in a phone booth with guys on his hip, right, in front of him, on his side, and then Ottinger in very good position. That's a good goal. So good for him. He obviously, he hasn't told me yet, but he heard the podcast. And so it motivated. You know, yeah, there's just little things I do for these guys. And
even,
yeah.
Well, even Skinner, I didn't realize had that in him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I didn't realize he had the ability to win you a game. Not that he was single-handedly, but like, you, like, in order to win, you've got to score three or four and try to limit the other team's shots to under 30, you know? And mm-hmm. you do that, you give Skinner a chance to get you in the game. That didn't happen, and it didn't matter. So that was like him in game 6 and 7. We were talking about him not like last week about when does Picard come in? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't that crazy to think about it. And here he is. He deserves so much credit for that. And, you know, Edmonton is just, they have Canada back in the finals. They haven't won since 1992, I think, any Canadian team. And so, yeah, it's cool to have them back in. And I was really rooting for Dallas. I missed most of the first period. I turned the TV on. It was already 2-0.
What were you doing?
Dinner.
With who? The girlfriend?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Smooching? Yeah. You smooching a little? Damn.
That is none of your business, John.
Okay.
Yeah, but that anyway, so yeah, that was tough. And I was thinking a little bit more about the difference between, because you've had the depth, a little bit more depth the last couple of years for Edmonton. You've had Evander, you've had Nuge take a major step forward in the last couple of years. Hyman, obviously, and I think Bouchard. It can't be understated. Like, everyone knows how good he is, but like, that's the difference between a skilled top-heavy team being like a fringe playoff team to they're in the Cup Finals now. It's the biggest thing is what Bouchard has done. And not only what he's producing, but how he pushes the other guys further down the depth chart and they can play more comfortably in their roles because you don't need Nurse to put up points. You know what I mean? And so it's just
because he can't.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. They've had these
two in the past and he hasn't delivered.
You know they've had mean? These puck moving guys. They've had Justin Schultz. They had Tyson Berry. They had Duncan Keith for a while, maybe 1 year. But yeah, it just Evan Bouchard, for as much as he gets offensively, he's pretty good defensively too. Like he's doing it all. He's really taken the reins of that number one defenseman that were just thrust to him this year. And he's been really, really good with it. He's third on the team in points, 27 points. He's plus 14. He's playing really good. So it's a relief for the Edmonton Oilers to be able to rely on him because it's him and Matthias Ekholm, really. Those are the two great players. Ekholm's been really, really good. He gets a lot of the matchups with the other team's top line. He's done really well. He's a prick with a stick. Oh, frustrated me to watch him. He's just hacking everybody, slashing everybody, pushing everybody up after the whistle. I like the way he plays. He's done really well for him because Vinny Desharnais stinks. Nurse, we all know his issues. He stinks. And, you know, there's Kulak and CeCe. Those guys are good for what they are. But it's basically Bouchard and Ekholm. Those are the two guys they can rely on who have played very, very well. And he just calms things down. On the power play, he has the confidence enough to shoot it when it's there. And he dishes it. And he gives it to the guy in the right spot when he needs it. I watched the Chicago Blackhawks power play this year a lot, and it was so frustrating watching Seth Jones. He was on the top of the umbrella there, whatever the hell you call it, the triangle. Every pass he gave to Connor Bedard was never in his wheelhouse, ever. It was maddening to watch. It was either too hard and on his back foot, so he had to corral it, or it was too soft on his front foot, so he couldn't one-time it. Never in the right spot. And Bedard hated it because he wanted to one-time it. He wanted to do something quick with it. And he always had to corral it. Bouchard doesn't do that. He lays it out there for McDavid. It's a beautiful spot. McDavid can either skate into it or shoot it. He's really good at it. It is an art. It's not that hard to learn. Seth Jones stinks at it. Like, you should have heard me in the studio when I called these games. Get this guy off the power play. He's so bad on the power play, but they still throw him out there. But anyways, Bouchard's mastered it. And that's all he had to do. Like, you have Draisaitl and McDavid and the Nuge and Hyman. Just give it to a man and then shoot it when it's open. And he's done that really well, Tim. So Edmonton, very, very fun. Very good for them. And Corey Perry making history.
Yeah, this is his fourth time in 5 years and fifth in his career where he's going to the Stanley Cup Finals. Obviously, he won in Anaheim in 07, and then he was with Dallas, Montreal, Tampa, and now back with Edmonton. This is amazing. It's really impressive. I wonder
if this will be the longest, if they win, the longest time between Stanley Cups for a player. Because 2007 is a long, it's almost 20 years ago. Fast forward 14 years. Would this be, do you know that stat, Tim?
Well, I know Recchi won in 06 or 05 with the Hurricanes, whatever year that was. And then again in, no, not Recchi. Oh, no. Who am I thinking? There's a guy that won three and it was like 15 years apart, but he won one in the middle. So it wasn't a big gap in between. I think it was Recchi. I don't know. No, did he win with the Flyers or back in the day?
What are we doing here? Are you just trying to make stuff up?
Recchi. No. It's Recchi. I just don't know. Penguins. He won as like a very, very young with like Yager, Lemieux and those guys. And then he won again in 05-06. So it was like a 20-year gap, but he won in the middle. So it wasn't the biggest difference.
So it wasn't a 20-year gap.
20 years between cups, but no, there was one in between.
Okay. I don't want to dig into this, but yes, very, very neat Corey Perry stat. How happy was he to get released from Chicago, go to Edmonton? Jackpot. Chance to win a Stanley Cup. All right. Should we talk about the Stanley Cup final, or are we going to dig into it this week maybe? Because it's not till Saturday. We have a little bit of time.
Yeah, let's get into it during the week. We'll bring some people on maybe that can speak about these teams a little bit more depth and talk about the matchups.
What do you think of this late Stanley Cup final start? Because it's Monday, and so they have 6 days until game one of the Stanley Cup final. Like, that's a long-ass time to sit around.
I feel like it's not that unusual because you've got like all the fan fest stuff. You've got the media days. Like, it's, I don't think it's that typical. I think the fact that it's more spread out is more unusual, where you have like three or four different 3 day gaps between games. I don't like that, but
the travel, the players are just like, my word, that's a long flight, and you gotta stop.
It's the northernmost and southernmost teams in the league.
Crazy.
Yeah, and some like some beat reporter making, you know, $45K a year is making all these trips. It's gonna be, that's tough.
That's tough. That stinks. That's a lot of flying. And the Florida Panthers were hoping Dallas was going to win. Come on, Dallas. Let's go win that. Get to game seven. That's an easy flight, Florida-Dallas. Going to Edmonton? No, thank you. I was born there. I still don't want to fly there. Interesting stat here. And this plays into the salary cap deal. This plays into John Tavares's fight with the Canadian tax company, the CRA, whatever it is, revenue service. Of the last, what was it, 7 years? Other than one, there's been a team in the Stanley Cup Finals in a state that has no taxes associated with it. So Texas, Florida, Vegas, Nashville, none of those states have income tax. So what you make is what you make. The state doesn't take anything out of it. The government takes a pinch, no state tax. New York Rangers, if you're living in the city, it's 54%. California, it's 50%, if not more. There are huge tax implications. If you're in Canada, just to whack off more than half. And then they go after your signing bonus now, as we're seeing in the John Tavares situation, which is huge, huge implications what's happening there. Like, I'm talking, this will change. And I know people, they make millions of dollars. Yeah. Just say you make $10 million. Would you rather get the $10 million, all of it, or see the Canadian government take $6.5 million of it, and then you only make $3.5 million? What would you rather do? I think I'd rather make all 10. So huge implications coming from that ruling from the John Tavares fight now, legal fight with the Canadian Revenue Service. So that'll be one to watch. The CRA just released a statement kind of giving their side of it. John Tavares already given his side of it. Huge implications. But anyways, back to the no stack, no state tax. Do you think this will be a theme moving forward, Tim? Because it's been the Panthers, the Knights, the Panthers, the Lightning, Dallas Stars, Knights, and Predators over the last 7 years. So that's a big sample size, considering there's not a lot of teams in those no state tax areas, but they're all making the cup finals.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And I saw some tweets that were kind of the argument against, were like, what about the teams that don't have state income tax and still never make the finals or have been bad forever? Like, you still have to like be smart about the players. It's not like it's saying you get automatically in. You know what I mean? Like, you still have to make good trades and execute and all that, bring draft well. But yeah, it does give you a leg up, you know, and there's going to be like, I don't know, the players are watching this, you know, it's like if it's between two evenly matched teams, that it's not just the fact that I'll get an extra 20% or 40% or whatever back if I go this state over that state. It's like I have a better chance of going to the finals because of look at the data. You know what I mean? Like players are smart about this. So yeah, it's huge, I think.
Absolutely. And there's a reason these teams are successful. It's because the GMs use it as a tool. Like it's a no-brainer. If you can go and barter with a Steven Stamkos. We knew Toronto was heavy in on him. Everybody did. But Tampa Bay said, okay, you can go make $12 million in Toronto. You'll be at home. You'll pull in five and a half. If you stay in Tampa, you have no state tax. You have a government tax. You'll pull in $9 to $10 million. You'll make a ton more. And then maybe we only give you $10 million, so you'll make the same amount. We can add players around you and be a successful team. So it might look like you're making less to the untrained eye, but you're making just as much as you would anywhere else. Your take home is the same. We're allowed to go out and get a Braden Point, an Alex Killorn, these types of players to play with you so we can win Stanley Cups after Stanley Cups and go to three straight cup finals. Does that sound good to you? So it's a smart, you know, smart thing for the GMs to do. I don't understand why the Canadian government does it. Oh, I do understand because they're going for the money. But is it a situation of like, what is it called? Like eating your hand to despite or chopping off your ear to spite your face or something. There's a saying like that. It's like, okay, you get the money now, but then does that prevent players from wanting to sign in Canada and signing for those big signing bonuses? So you won't be able to tap into that. Mm-hmm. Because they already got a little piece of it. Tavares paid him $1.5 million or something of that signing bonus, but now they want $8 or $6.5 million plus taxes. So they want $8 million more. But what if players don't do the signing bonuses anymore? Because they won't. So then you miss out on all that.
Yeah, a lot of the Tavares thing had to do with his residency location too.
163 days in Canada. Yeah, there's a whole ins and outs. He got taxed in the States and now Canada's trying to double tax him and whatever. But there are rules in place. It is what it is. They'll figure it out. But it's going to end up bad for Canadian teams. I'm sure the GMs are frustrated because this will affect how they can sign players. Because like I said, if I'm a stud player coming into this offseason, if I'm Jake Guentzel, I'm not even going to take calls from Canada. Why would I?
Right.
There's no point. Even if they have fantastic facilities or Edmonton and Toronto, all these places have great, not Ottawa, Ottawa's facilities stink. Absolute garbage. But yeah, why would you want to do that? Go somewhere else to make a ton of money, not have to deal with all this crap, the government coming after you. Whatever. That's my two cents. This show's been long. We got to go. Anything else, Tim?
That's it. We'll be back on Wednesday.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll talk to you later. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.